Liability and Indemnification. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So what protections from liability do directors have? The directors are the people on the board of directors, and I think we're talking about both the acquirer's board and the target's board?
Yeah, I think these are really for every board of directors. You know, the board of directors have great power under Delaware law. All the business and affairs of the corporation have to be, done under the direction by or under the direction of the board of directors under Delaware Section 141. They have obviously fiduciary duties that are fairly significant imposed on them in their management of the company. But there are also, and we've talked about things like the standard of review and how they can be protected in their decisions by the business judgment rule. But there's also statutory provisions that limit the liability of directors, and these vary from state to state. In Delaware, for example, companies can include provisions in their certificate of incorporation that eliminate directors' liability and damages for breaches of their duty of care. I think almost everybody does that. It's called a 102b7 provision. There are also statutory rights to indemnity and advancement of expenses that apply to directors and officers. These folks are entitled to mandatory indemnity for expenses incurred and damages and amounts paid in settlement and third-party actions if they've acted in good faith and in a manner that they reasonably believe to be in or not opposed to the company's interests. Indemnity in derivative actions is generally limited to expenses incurred, and under statutes, advancement of expenses is generally at the discretion of the company.
And what about officers? These are executive officers, those at the top. Do they have the same kind of protection that directors have?
They usually have similar rights to indemnity and advancement of expenses, but there are some important differences. First, in Delaware and in many other states, these folks don't have the protection from liability that apply to directors. They also are frequently not entitled to the protection of the business judgment rule. And both of those things are very big deals. In fact, it's led to officers being targeted in a number of lawsuits in recent years. Very active. The FDIC has been very active with this with bank directors after the financial crisis. They're looking to maximize the pool of cash that's available to reimburse the government for bailing these banks out, and the D&O policies that are in place have been pretty attractive, and they've been trying to figure out ways to get to them. And one of the ways they've been doing is going after officers because they've looked at state laws, and in many states you don't have the protection of the business judgment rule, and you don't have the limitation of liability. So officers are potentially exposed to liability for breaches of their fiduciary duty of care. Now, in the old days, nobody focused on this, and that was because there was so much overlap between the board and officers that if you could sue a director, that person was likely an officer of the corporation as well, and it was kind of hard, and people didn't really see the value in sorting, trying to sort that out, which hat somebody was wearing at a particular time. That's not the case anymore. Obviously, in light of all the reforms that have happened with public companies and financial institutions, you have, generally speaking, majority, you may only have one or two officers on a corporate board. So they have targeted officers as a potential source of funding in connection with lawsuits. Now, some states have acted to provide officers, put officers essentially equal footing with directors and extend their limitations of liability and business judgment rule protection to them as well. Ohio, my state, is an example of that. But it's clearly a minority of the states that are in that position right now.
And what do companies do to protect their officers and directors?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, you have the statutory protections in place, and those are typically supplemented with charter provisions and indemnity agreements in many cases that expand those rights. For example, advancement of expenses, which is discretionary in most state corporate statutes, that becomes mandatory under charter provisions. They have a right to get those expenses advanced, assuming that they provide the undertaking to repay if they're found that they're not entitled to them, which is something that's a statutory requirement. You often will see provisions allowing directors and officers to be indemnified, not just for expenses that they incur in derivative actions, but also for amounts that are paid in settlement of those cases. And the charter documents and indemnity agreements often will also establish very pro director, very director and officer favorable procedures for asserting a claim and establishing a right to indemnification or advancement under the charters or the agreement. Finally, and this is really very important, there are D&O policies which backstop those indemnity agreements and provide coverage for things that can be difficult for the corporation to indemnify directors and officers for, like derivative settlements, which are, as I said before, are treated differently than third-party claims.
What about former directors and officers? Are they still protected?
Yeah, they generally are. They're under the statute. They're entitled to the same kind of protection that current directors and officers are, and charter provisions almost universally will cover them as well. And if you have an indemnification agreement, chances are that it's going to continue to apply to you after you have left the board of directors or retired as an officer.
And then finally, let's drill down a little bit more on the seller side. What about their directors and officers? How are they protected in a merger?
Yeah, I think anytime you're dealing with a significant merger transaction with a public company or even a private company that has institutional representation on the board, you will very frequently see elaborate provisions in there relating to indemnification, advancement of expenses, and continuation of D&O coverage for market standard is 6 years. Provisions essentially will require the buyer to honor any existing indemnification arrangements, advance arrangements as written. Many times they'll require the surviving corporation to maintain provisions in its charter documents that are substantially equivalent to the protections that are in the charter documents of the selling corporation. Sometimes you'll even see an ask made, and occasionally it's given, where the parent company, the buyer, will actually undertake some direct indemnification obligations to those directors and officers. There's also a provision in there where there will be a continuation of existing D&O coverage, and even if the premiums increase, you've got to keep paying it. There's typically a cap of around 300%, 200 to 300%, I think, is market range for the cap on D&O coverage, and that's typically a six-year provision. So these are very extensive protections that you see. And it's kind of ironic when I taught law school, and we would cover the differences between a private company merger and a public company merger. You know, the traditional private company mom and pop type of a business, you wouldn't have this kind of indemnification. The indemnification that matters in the private company world is going the other way. But in the public company world, and even in I said some other high-profile private equity type of private company transactions, you're going to have these kind of provisions where the buyer is going to stand up and undertake some obligations, ongoing obligations, to the seller's directors and officers post-closing.
Great stuff. Thanks as always.
You're welcome.